On this show, I often get to talk to people who are pursuing big dreams, taking big risks in order to follow a calling they can't imagine letting go of. This episode is about someone who had that all come together for him. And then life kept happening. Musician Johnny Solomon has a band called Communist Daughter. And right at the time the band was seeing its first big success, he was falling apart. Then his mother stepped in to help, and then she needed help. I interviewed Johnny and his mom after he and his wife moved in to help with his mom's care for an episode that came out in 2018. And since then, life has kept happening.
I don't know, the two hardest things that I've ever been through in my life were getting sober and then going through the hospice stuff with mom. And I think it's, you know, she was a part of both of those. She was very much a part of both of them.
3 years ago, Johnny's mom, Nancy, died in hospice at home. We're going to share that original episode with you this week that's really about how many directions care can move in a family. And then listen to the end to hear about Johnny and his wife's family now.
When I asked for help, my mom dropped everything. And so when my mom had said that they were having trouble and they needed help, I figured it would be better for us to just be here and make a life here.
This is Death, Sex, and Money, the show from Slate about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. I'm Anna Sale. In early 2017, the Minnesota-based band Communist Daughter was on the road. They were promoting their second full-length album, stopping at clubs, radio stations, and festivals across the country. Till I fall, till I fall, till I fall. But driving from gig to gig, their lead singer, Johnny Solomon, was worried. A few months earlier, he'd gone to visit his mom and her husband outside San Diego. His wife, Molly, came too. She's also in the band.
It became more and more evident that they really did need somebody close by.
She said, like half crying, that, that they needed help.
Did your mom specifically say, what do you think about spending more time out here, being here full time for a period?
Yeah, it didn't come off that nicely.
Yeah, she was like, it's time.
Do you guys want some coffee? Do you want some donuts?
We met Johnny and Molly not on the road, but at the two-bedroom bungalow in California that they soon shared with Johnny's mom, Nancy, and her husband, Hugh. Hugh has dementia, and Nancy has a degenerative nerve disease that's similar to multiple sclerosis. Johnny and Molly became their live-in caregivers.
Like, we're living in a guest room out of suitcases still.
So your clothes aren't in drawers?
No, we've created...
we've done what we could out of, you know...
At my dresser right now is I took out all of Nancy's files in her...
So a file cabinet.
It's like a file cabinet made out of, like, wicker, though. And so, yeah, that's my...
It doesn't feel like we...
Dresser.
We tour... so much, or we did tour so much that, you know, we're used to living out of small spaces and suitcases.
Johnny sent us an email shortly after they moved to California in the summer of 2017. He wrote, "It put our career, our music, my whole existence into a no man's land. My wife and I made our money touring, but now we can't really tour. My band and manager are all trying to figure out how the music goes on, or if it does."
And I recognized this CD.
Yeah.
Mom has to have CDs.
We sat in their open living room, where Johnny's mom, Nancy, has a big recliner that rotates around so she can keep watch on what's going on throughout the house. Molly and Johnny and I squeezed in around her.
I feel like we're, like, having a huddle right here, because we're all gathered around
natural,
lean.
Right?
Yeah.
Now we should all put our arms around.
Nancy told me her illness makes it hard to move around much.
It takes all my energy, so I can't do as much. So it's been a very difficult, because I was a very active person. Mm-hmm.
Growing up, she was the alpha female, you know. I mean, she's still the boss. She just now sits in her throne the whole time.
Well, I kind of manipulate her.
That's something that Molly had to get used to. Mom has this way of like bossing you around, but in a way that you can tell that she cares, but it'll be like, you know, like, move that box, sit right there, move that chair over here, you know, and it's like, she cares, but it comes out as mom is in charge.
Having four kids did it.
Yeah.
Having four kids did it, Nancy said. Nancy is tall and broad-shouldered like her son. She's a psychiatrist, one of the only women in her medical school class. She still works part-time at a local mental health clinic, where she used to work full-time before her symptoms got worse. She was getting ready for a shift when I visited, but generally her schedule is less busy these days.
Like Friday, she has her hair appointment, and mm-hmm. But then, you know, like, we come back and she's mostly here in this chair. So we're kind of running around, and when she needs something, fetching something.
And we keep one person in the house. One person's there. Yeah, because I've fallen before. If I fall, I can't get up.
Johnny told me that of all his siblings, he was in the best position to come out to help. But he was not always someone that Nancy could rely on.
I think Mom has seen a huge change in me as a person in the last few years.
There has been a change, a very comfortable change.
Throughout his 20s and early 30s, as Johnny's music career was taking off and he was running a promising new restaurant near Minneapolis, he struggled with substance abuse and undiagnosed mental illness. It tested his relationships with everyone in his life, including his mom.
She was always still, like, loved me no matter what I did. And because I was a meth addict. I was alcohol and meth. And, you know, people see... they see it from the outside, but it's impossible to explain it from the inside of what it does to your soul, what it does to every part of you. Where, I mean, I could lie all the time. I could do just this part. This dark part of me was just all of me, and I did really terrible things to the people I loved.
And one time when he was here.
He was
yelling at me and disrespectful.
Yeah, I was cussing at everybody, and yeah, Molly was here for that too.
And when you say you were using meth, like, is it something you would buy? Were you ever making it?
I always bought it. There was a period for about 2 years I was using it every day. And I would buy it and smoke it or eat it or snort it. But then, I was spending, I don't know, $600-$700 a week maybe on it.
Did you have that money?
I found that money. I mean, I at the time I had a restaurant, which probably would have done really well because it was good food.
You got top 10...
Best new restaurants in Midwest Living Magazine.
Midwest. Mm-hmm.
So when you say you found that money, was it money that should have gone to other things, or money that you got from other people?
Money that I should have gone for other things. It was like in the budget of the restaurant to make sure that I had, you know, about $600 a week that I would take out in cash. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's very unpleasant to think about.
This was in 2010, when the band was promoting their first record and starting to have a lot of success. Johnny was falling apart. That became clear one night when the band was playing a big show in Minneapolis.
I got on stage and I was a disaster. It was rough.
It was embarrassing.
I was high and drunk, and I mean, I was heavy.
We started
sores on my face.
Song.
And to the point where, like, You know, and I think most people knew there was something wrong with me. And I ended up, I had called my mom and I was like, I can't wait any longer. You know, this is, I'm like, I'm at the bottom. And if it gets any lower, it's going to get way worse.
Why was it your mom that you called?
I don't know. Maybe because that's the last person that would take my call. And I'd asked her for help so many times and she never said no. Even though so many people in my life had started saying no. And I just knew that, and I knew what, when I called her, I knew what I was asking for. And I knew that she was the one who was, you know, she would know when I was serious. And so she knew that I was asking for help for real.
If he didn't get help, it was over.
Yeah.
I mean,
that
I
was in his voice.
Yeah, I had nothing left, and I suddenly couldn't write songs anymore. And that's when I realized, like, oh, like, God's going to take everything away from me unless I do something. So that's when I called my mom.
As a physician, we always sent our physicians, when they got in trouble, to Hazleton. It was just something we did. And we thought they did a good job. So I insisted that he had to go to Hazleton. And he did.
Did you help him pay for that? Did you pay for the treatment?
Yes.
This is, it's death, sex, and money, Mom. So we got to talk about all of them.
Yes.
It took most of my retirement. You know, it was not all of it, but it took a big...
It was an investment.
Yes, it was a wonderful investment.
Johnny went to rehab at a Hazleton Betty Ford Treatment Center in Minnesota for 45 days. Coming up, I talk with Johnny and Molly about how his sobriety changed the dynamics of their band and made him surprisingly suited for caregiving.
People who know me know that I love things that only old people should love. You know, I'm a big fan of The Golden Girls and Murder, She Wrote and Going to Bed Early.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from Slate. I'm Anna Sale. While Johnny Solomon was in rehab, his band, Communist Daughter, got their first major nationwide exposure. Grey's Anatomy used some of their music in an episode, including this song, Soundtrack to the End.
We put on a pretty face, and we never saved our money. And then we got stuck in place, and I lost my milk and honey.
So did you actually saw like Grey's Anatomy and heard your song playing
in treatment?
In treatment.
Yeah.
Were you in like a group room?
That's exactly what.
Yeah, you have to like ask to use the TV or to have
Yeah, because I had to, like, we have to watch Grey's Anatomy and everyone, you know, gets to vote on what they're going to watch. And it was neat, too, because when you're in treatment, you know, you're with all these different people from all different walks of life. And, you know, there's a little bit of, like, it's like, I'm a musician. Oh, who are you? And it's like, you probably never heard of me. But now you've heard of me. Look, I'm on Grey's Anatomy.
And some of the best of us are already home, still singing softly through the stereo.
While he was in rehab, Johnny was also diagnosed as bipolar. His mom, Nancy, a psychiatrist, knew that was in their family history, but she didn't think Johnny was affected.
I didn't think it was in my genes or didn't think about it. So, you know, this is sad, but if they're on medication, they can be, they're just as normal as everybody else.
Do you find yourself like doing clinical check-ins of Johnny? Like, do you sort of like...
Yes, she does.
I try not to. I mean, I think it always, because of my training, I can't say I don't.
She asked me a lot about how much I sleep.
That's probably true, I have to say.
It's totally fine.
Yeah, it's... I have, all through my training, when I'm meeting with couples and things like that, it's, a lot of times I have told them, okay, 18... your children are their own. They're no longer yours. and you have to let them go. And you do kind of cry about it because you've spent all this time, mm-hmm. but they have to have that choice. So I was so fortunate when one decided that I was a close part of his life.
It was time for Nancy to leave to see patients at the clinic. Johnny helped her out the door.
Are you going to your
room? Cane.
I've got your cane.
Okay.
Johnny is 39. Molly, his wife, is 32. It's not clear how long they'll have to live out here in Southern California. And that's caused a lot of uncertainty at a time when they really want to be planning for their future.
I mean, it could be like a year of our life. It could be 10 years of our life.
What was the conversation like between you two when you were, when it was first brought up about the possibility of moving out here full time?
Honestly, I was pretty hesitant to get on the bandwagon there. Cause all my, you know, my whole family lives in Minnesota and we're pretty close and all my friends. And also it was coming up on the time where we were starting to talk about kids, and my whole thing was like, I can't be away from my mom when I, that was something that was like really important to me. I don't know. Also, my parents they're a lot younger than John's. So I just wasn't really thinking about that yet.
Johnny, though, has been looking for a change for a while. Since getting sober, life as a touring musician has become harder.
I start getting really, I get really angry. I get really short. I feel really lonely, even though like I'm surrounded by people the whole time. It's really hard to describe. And, you know, sometimes the thing that's tough is that like I'm sober and I'm bipolar and I have to be surrounded by drunk, you know, fun-loving party, you know, rolling through every town, and it's like the last thing I want to do and the last thing that's good for me.
Well, it sounds like such a contrast to your routine now.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love routine. I love it because when things get out of control, then I start to really lose control. And we had always, when we were on tour, we'd always stop and stay in San Diego, and it felt like this real... It felt like this magical place where for 2 weeks out of our very hectic and sometimes very stressful life, we got to spend 2 weeks in San Diego having, you know, like eating oranges off the tree.
It was like a vacation, yeah.
And so like it, to me, it was always like, wouldn't this be great if we just moved to San Diego for a little bit? It would be this huge life shift where we'd have to decide what we were doing with our life.
You know, it strikes me that like figuring out different ways to make money at, you know, sort of an earlier, like having a kind of like in your 30s, is this music thing going to work out? Do I need to make money another way? You all have an extreme version of that. But I guess I imagine you have peers who have gone through similar sort of like, is this going to happen or is this not? And do we need to come up with a different plan?
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, you know, our idea of success when you're in your 20s, you just think things will figure themselves out. If I do what I love, things will figure themselves out. And now in my 30s, my late 30s, it's like, oh, well, yeah, everyone knew you can't make money at music. Like everyone knows that, you know? And so I'm at this age now where it's like, if I don't figure something else out, what else am I going to do? You know, like, am I going to be the guy who learned to play, you know, Irish folk tunes so I could, you know, do it Wednesdays at the local Irish pub or something, you know, like, but I don't know. So like, I luckily I've started to like what I thought would feel like kind of soul sucking by looking somewhere else starts to feel actually kind of freeing.
Molly and Johnny are living rent-free now as they figure out what's next. Johnny's started taking online grad school classes to become a substance abuse counselor. Molly told me she was applying for pharmacy tech jobs. Their band, Communist Daughter, is still officially together, but they told me it feels like it's on hiatus. Most of their time is spent taking care of Johnny's mom and her husband. And they know that will only escalate especially as Nancy's illness progresses.
It is the thing with my mom where it's funny how like 90% of the time, like when I wake up in the morning and I look at my day, it looks like I don't have anything to do. But as soon as you step out of that door, it could be like, oh, you know, mom has to go to a doctor now, or, you know, like suddenly something happened with the bank and I've got to run there. And so you, even though you have all this, like you think you're going to have free time, you know, you kind of have to be, your schedule has to be kind of open.
Is she able to move in and out of the bathroom on her own?
It's hard. It's really hard. It like wears her out so much. So it is probably going to get to that point pretty soon, and we're not sure.
We've talked about maybe having somebody come in, you know, mm-hmm. once a week or, yeah. you know, for bathing.
But I do, you know, sometimes I have to help her put on articles of clothing or, you know, put on, well, pretty much every, you know, her jewelry, I have to put that on. She can't reach up high and her hands shake, so.
And then there's, you know, just the things of like, mom, you can't walk around, you can't, you know, you're gonna fall over, you're gonna knock things over. So you end up like having these conversations where it's like, you can't, no, like I'm gonna pour your soy sauce. And she's like, you know, a very smart, very
right,
you know, right. And she was the boss for so long, and now I'm telling her she can't pour her own soy sauce. Because
it is funny how those roles get reversed, and it's been a learning experience.
I think being out here has been interesting because it forces Molly's head to, you know, be vocal about certain things, especially with my mom's way of dealing with things.
Yeah, it actually has been good because it's like making me a stronger person.
Give me an example. Making me like, more. Can you think of something?
I'm a very like, I'll go out of my way to do something nice kind of a person, which I don't know. That sounds so weird saying that out loud. But there have been times when, you know, I don't finish my breakfast or it gets cold because I have to, you know, help her do something that actually isn't very important and it can totally wait. Like I've learned to be like, actually, I'm eating my breakfast right now. So is it okay if I throw away the newspaper for you later?
She's so bossy about the way she
says things. Would you mind setting
that
on the counter next to you, or, you know?
Yeah.
I love that, thinking about that being like, I get to say, can I please finish my breakfast?
Yeah.
Like talking yourself into that.
Yeah. And she's gotten a lot better though.
Yeah.
Because you've pointed out those things to her so often.
It's weird now because it's becoming more of like, I feel more like a parent where I catch myself being, I don't know. Well, I know what kind of parent maybe I'll be. I'll be the, like.
Really? It's like a little glimpse into that?
Yeah. And it's the things, it's like not the good things. It's the things that like, oh, this is going to really fluster me.
Do you feel like you found a community at all here, Molly? Yep.
No, I haven't. But I kind of, I'm kind of enjoying it in a way, like just having a lot of free time, or at least, yeah, like John says, you expect to have free time. It's funny how that changes throughout the day, but I don't know. It's just such a different, it's such a difference out here. You know, you don't have a community and you don't have friends and you don't have.
We have some friends that we met through being on tour, that like some musicians and some people that came to some shows.
We haven't hung out with them still.
Yeah, but they're in once. You know, we're up here like in this kind of retirement little area, and you know, so it's like a 40-minute drive to go hang out with them, and we would, but it's also I got to be back here every night to make dinner, and you know, you can't miss your shows. We watch a lot of TV right now.
What have been your strategies to have privacy as a couple?
Oh.
Well, we have decided that once a month, we'll have like a date night where we...
Once a month.
And we'll go away to like a hotel or something.
And then every once in a while, like they'll go out to eat dinner. Yeah, I think even if they don't want to, they'll go out, you know, once every couple weeks.
Yeah.
Which is still then like we're looking at once every 2 weeks. But, you know, we talked about, like, this is a time in our life where we want to talk about starting a family. And so it becomes like, how are we going to do that here? You know, you don't want to be changing diapers on both sides of things. It's this weird, morbid conversation that you have to have where you have to be like, well, will they die before we, you know, get pregnant? So then we could go back to Minnesota. And that's like such a weird thing to like, to be like, well, we don't hope that.
No,
we don't,
not at all.
But it's like, could we make it work if, you know, if Molly gets pregnant out here, would she resent me? And, you know, like, I don't know. It was just a lot of conversations where when it came down to it, it was just like, this is what felt like we had to do, because if we didn't do it, what's the other option?
Man, I hate this town. So I'm looking for the only way out. And the life I wanted years ago is maybe not the life I should have found.
So life has changed a lot. I mean, we live in Alaska now. We've lived here for about 4 or 5 years.
That's Johnny in a voice memo he sent us just last week. He let us know that there was a period of time where Nancy's condition stabilized, and that gave him a chance to move with Molly to Alaska, where he worked as a therapist for underserved Native Alaskan communities. He now runs a statewide behavioral health program.
We've got some Arctic husky puppies, and we were foster parents, and but then we were blessed with our own little guy. Henry, can you say hi?
Yeah.
We didn't think we were going to be able to have kids. And then this guy came along. Yeah, wow, that's right.
Lately, I've been well. If you never ask.
And Communist Daughter released another album in 2021. This is a song from it called Living With Your Ghost.
But I won't fault you there. I guess it's how it goes. Living with your ghost.
Not long after they released that album, Nancy was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer and decided to do hospice at home. Johnny went back to care for her again. He described their final week together as the hardest of his life, administering morphine and many other drugs, navigating Hugh's worsening dementia, and dealing with a shift in Nancy's demeanor where she could become angry and combative. He told us in an email that he sent us at the time, in the end, I got to tell her how much I loved her, and I hope that wherever she was or is, that she understood it. Molly is now working as a nurse in a local hospital. She credits her experience taking care of Nancy as being a catalyst for getting her nursing degree.
I'd thought about nursing for a long time, but I always thought, oh, I don't know if I'll actually really like doing that, because I think I had heard a lot of people say, oh, you'd have to deal with this and you wouldn't want to do that. And I'm actually pretty cool with all that stuff. And I wouldn't have known that had I not taken care of your mom. That sounds weird. But and I wouldn't have known like the joy that it brought, I guess, just being able to take care of someone in the ways that she needed taken care of, and I do have to do things like that for my job. It's hard to believe that so many huge things have happened in our life since she's passed, and that she never knew our son, and she never got to meet her grandson. I think about it all the time. I think about just how much joy she would get from
us going through this experience.
Yeah.
And Henry has a picture of her hanging up in his room that every night when I put him to bed, I say, that's your guardian angel. She was a battle axe of a lady, and she's probably telling God what to do up there. Right, buddy? All right, bye. I hope everybody enjoys the episode.
That's Johnny, Molly, and Henry Solomon. This episode was originally produced by Katie Bishop and me in 2018 with help from Emily Botine, Annabelle Bacon, Will Huntsberry, and Andrew Dunn. Death, Sex, and Money is produced by Slate. Please support the production of our show by becoming a member of Slate Plus. You'll not only support our work on death, sex, and money, you'll get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the great shows that Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Decoder Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. Be a part of helping us build a solid foundation at Death, Sex, and Money's new home by subscribing to Slate Plus. To subscribe, just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or go to slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. You'll be supporting the show and the people who make Death, Sex, and Money with me at Slate: Andrew Dunn, Zoe Azoulay, and Cameron Drews. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer at Slate. Alicia Montgomery is Slate's head of audio. Our theme music is by the Reverend John Delure and Steve Lewis. And if you're new to our show, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Find us and follow us on Instagram at Death, Sex, Money. And you can get my weekly newsletter at annasale.substack.com. You can also reach us anytime with voice memos, pep talks, questions, critiques at our email address, deathsexmoney@slate.com. We love hearing from you. After our first episode with Johnny Rann back in 2018, he told us that he got a phone call from his ex-wife with some useful feedback. She told him that he interrupted Molly and his mother too many times.
I'm trying not to interrupt you based off of remembering how I sounded in that recording.
Oh. I don't even remember. Were you just like talking over me and stuff?
I talked over you and Mom a lot. I didn't think I was just so nervous. I was like, ugh.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from Slate.